You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Without further ado, the Dear Friends podcast.
Dear friends, spill your woes to your musical family. Dear friends, they will take your questions and turn them into nuggets of wisdom and anecdotes in an otherwise cynical world. Dear friends.
Hi, I'm dear friend Emily.
I'm dear friend Christy.
And I'm dearest friend Jess. And welcome to Dear Friends, the writing advice podcast for the musical minded.
Oh, my dears, my dear friends.
Oh, my goodness. I love you both very, very much.
Love you too.
I don't know why, but I'm in a very, very cozy vibe today. It might have something to do with the question that we got written in by someone with a doctorate. This is one Dr. Dillamond who writes in asking, what are your favorite Stephen Schwartz musicals?
Are we going to rate them? Like, do our rating system?
This will be our top five Stephen Schwartz musicals.
Well, that's going to be interesting because I may have some controversial rankings here.
Geppetto, number one.
Is it Geppetto or My Son Pinocchio, the stage version?
I guess it depends. You know, it's Geppetto in the movie, but.
Oh, Drew Carey all the way. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Got to have the Wayne Brady and all that.
Oh, come on. Got Usher doing like Usher. The second great magic to do. It's fantastic.
Yeah. I kind of like it, though. I'm not gonna lie, I kind of like the Usher in that movie.
Yeah.
He's one of the better parts of that movie.
I think do all three of us have videos or episodes about Geppetto?
I know Emily and Christy, you do. I've been saving that one. That's what I'm building up.
Yeah.
All right, Emily, why don't you start with your number five? What's your number five Stephen Schwartz musical?
Okay. My number five Stephen Schwartz musical is Godspell. And I never really knew Godspell growing up. I wasn't like a church kid. I know it's big for like community church theater. I only knew like Day by Day, really. And then I had to music direct a high school production, maybe 7 or 8 years ago. And I really got to know the score because they were doing the revival version, which is incredibly difficult. And I had to do a lot of work paring it down for high schoolers. But I remember being like, this is good. This is good music. Like, I really like these songs. I really like the flexibility of the show that you can kind of make it your own and shape it to the cast that you have and the performers that you have and their skill set. I can't think of very many big musicals that do that. And I love that you can do it anywhere. You could do it in a black box. You could do it outside. You could do it in a Broadway house. And I think it's just kind of good. It has that nice, like kind of 70s vibe, 70s pop music vibe. I just really like it a lot. It took me a while to get into it. And now that I know it and I know a lot of these songs, I'm like, this is a really good show. My husband apparently did it back in the day too.
Oh,
I would kill to see footage of that. Yeah. There's pictures of him. I'm pretty sure he was Jesus.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I can see him doing that.
Totally. Godspell, number five for me.
Heck yeah. Chrissy, what about you? What's your number five?
Okay, I am probably going to get crap for ranking it this low, but Wicked.
That's fine. I would never give you crap for that.
Other people might, because, you know, it's a really good gateway show. I mean, yeah. Obviously that was, you know, the millennial early Gen Z. That was what they saw in the theaters and said, yes, this is awesome. I want more of this. And obviously it's fantastic for that. And it's got some really catchy stuff. I think, you know, Defying Gravity is, you know, one of those, you know, great act one closers.
Yeah, you know, it would work in a film version that would be nice and long. And
yes,
in
an actual full foreign film version, it would be a good closer for it would be a good, you know, high point for about the middle of the film. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure you could end a film with it and then continue the story in a sequel.
I know. Watch this movie like break so many records though. Like I think the first one will do obscenely well, and then the second one will just lose a lot of good faith.
Yeah. It's, you know, but yeah, it's down this low, mostly because, you know, the lyrical work on it is interesting in places.
No, I agree.
Yeah, definitely. Some weird rhymes and some weird.
Yeah, there's some really
around of words.
Yeah,
how people normally speak in order to make a rhyme work. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, I kind of get that they're kind of doing this kind of weird Oz vocabulary slang, and that's fine. And some of it works, but then there's some of it like disgusted, defied. And I'm like, okay, you know, I'm not sure what that would actually mean. Like, definish, I like that because it's like, yeah, certainly, almost, maybe. I kind of like that, but there's some of it
what
like,
about
nah,
swankified
what?
And
swankified? Yeah, that's yeah, maybe. Yeah it's that kind of pseudo those. The pseudo Buffy speak that, you know, sometimes works, sometimes doesn't, and then it's there. Sometimes it's like, you know, like, okay, it's obvious you just said terrible green blizzard because you were running it. You didn't have too many things to win.
I thought it was green lizard for the longest time because I was like, lizards are green.
Yeah.
So this makes sense. But
yeah, and it's like, I don't know. Lizard. It's odd. Maybe lizards fly there. I will say there is one line that a lot of people crap on, and I don't think that deserves it. And it's, there are bridges you've crossed. You don't know you've crossed until you've crossed.
It's Diana. The people who will change the world are not the ones you think you'll change.
It's one of those things. It's like, yeah, it sounds kind of weird, but at the same time, I can see, you know, Glinda, who is not used to having, you know, complex thoughts and feelings about things. I can see her trying to, you know, phrase it in that way. So yeah, that works for me. So yeah,
that is an argument for character. But then you've got Nessa, I have something to confess.
Nessa, yeah, that was, yeah, I have
no. Wait, it's to confess something. Confessa.
Yeah, it is very tricky to, you know, do those rhymes over a phrase or, you know, even over a word, which he does a couple of times. Yeah. Like, your ascent allows me to feel so parental, things like that. And, you know, again, sometimes it's just like, what did you do there? What are you doing? So yeah, it's a great gateway show. I love that it sparked so many people's love for music theater. I'm not entirely sure if they're going to pull off this two movie thing, but there you have it.
I agree, because my number five is also Wicked. Wicked is, once again, everything that you said, but there are moments that, like, when it's live and you're watching it live, it's great. But I know that we talk a lot about community theater. I think that one of the reasons why this hasn't been given a theater license is because almost all of the magic will be gone from this as soon as, like, anyone else plays it outside of that, I think.
When it has to stand on just the book and the lyrics on its own, it's going to be really interesting.
Well, book, lyrics, and you do need to have two, you know, top-tier female leads, which is another good thing because not a whole lot of musicals that require that.
Yeah, I agree, but I just am imagining, like, I know Emily talks about this on her TikTok a lot, but those TikTok compilations of cringe are student performances, and I can see those coming out where it's just like a mashup, like the Courtney Take Your Break from Legally Blonde of just that.
I mean, frankly, I would love to have a Wicked Junior because every year I have students say, let's do Wicked. And I go, we can't. And after, you know, that show came out on Broadway in 2003.
Yeah. Something like that. It's
kind of like, what years now? Yeah. Can we let kids do this show already? I mean, I'm ready. I'm ready to see little kids with little Elphaba witch hat.
Yeah. You know, they'll love it. You know, great. Have high school kids, you know,
going
around.
Simplify it.
Yeah.
You can, I'm all for it.
It's one of those things where I see the producers are aware of the show shortcomings and realizing how much they would lose as soon as anyone tried to put the show on just on the backs of the book and score.
I mean, I think it's just because Wicked is always just a cash cow. You know, it's that like too. Phantom. Like, it's as long as they can make money.
Yeah, but even Phantom's has a high school production at this point. So
yeah. That took a minute too. Yeah, they were definitely not doing Phantom.
It was like
high school
well into 30 years before that happened. So
yeah.
25.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. But Wicked, not my favorite Schwartz musical. All right, Krista, you're next. Emily, you're next.
Go ahead.
Okay, so my next one is The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Ooh.
I have not seen the stage version, but I remember viscerally, and I'm sure Krista is with me here, seeing that movie in the theaters when I was, you know, in the 90s, and it blew my mind.
Oh, my goodness,
that whole entire score is it's frankly like remarkable. I don't know how they got away with a lot of it. I guess they had to throw in that gargoyle song, but the opening is one of Disney's best, one of the best villain songs.
Absolutely. That's obviously Alan Menken's wheelhouse, but the underscore is unbelievably amazing.
Yes. I never I'm not a church going person. However, I sang in choirs my whole life. And a lot of what you sing in choirs in educational theater is like stuff in Latin and stuff, you know, Dies Irae, stuff like that. And so I already had all that in my head. So being able to see that in a Disney movie was like, whoa, this is like the kind of heavy stuff. I'm singing four part harmonies in choir, and it just blew my mind. And I think Out There is a very good I Want song. Mm-hmm. When Jeff was on the cruise ship, he did the show called The Golden Mickeys, and he was an understudy for the guy playing Quasimodo. And one time he was like, I have to go run through this track. Do you want to come watch me do it? So I got to watch him unofficially play Quasimodo and sing it, and it was great.
Fun.
But yeah, I love that. Someday I'm sure I'll see the stage version. I feel like I know the stage version is a lot heavier and
I'm
going to
go
serious.
Into that a little later.
Yeah,
in my list.
Yeah, I have a feeling you guys
too.
Would, so.
I might, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But the Disney movie version, I think it's really good, and I think good lyricism from Schwartz. So. Mm-hmm.
All right, Krista, what about your number four?
My number four is Godspell, actually. A lot of what Emily said, it's a very, you know, good music. It's a very versatile show, which I think, you know, allows you to, you know, kind of say what you want with it. So, you know, and it's, you know, as far as, you know, biblical musicals go, it's pretty straightforward. I mean, most of it is lifted, you know, directly from the gospel text. I mean, I think the only thing really controversial you can say they do with it is that they double cast John the Baptist and Judas Iscariot, which I think is a very interesting thing. But yeah, it's got a lot of neat stuff. Day by Day, obviously, All for the Best is just like a really fun. The World is Fucked, but let's try
dance.
To be happy anyway.
La, 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 la.
Yeah, it's got a fun. It's got that fun little counterpoint there, and some really, just some really beautiful pieces.
Yeah.
And the movie disagree. Is, you know, the movie is really interesting too. You know, they obviously do it all around New York. I think, you know, my favorite part is when Jesus is arguing with the Pharisees, and they've kind of got like this weird, you know, found object sculpture puppet. You know, representing the religious authorities. I thought that was pretty cool. So
can I tell a story about Godspell specifically?
Oh,
the
sure.
Movie? I might cut this out, but I did bring this up in our episode on Godspell on Musicals of Cheese. But when I first started looking at Godspell, it was very early YouTube days. All for the Best ends with them on the World Trade Center.
They are on the World Trade Center, yeah, which was like just built back then. So
yeah, it was in the process of being built, but I guess some edgy musical theater fan was like just posted All for the Best and then added 9/11 footage at the end.
Oh my god!
I remember that very vividly, being my first experiencing watching the song All for the Best and then it cutting directly to a plane hitting.
Yeah.
Emily's I shouldn't right laugh now. At that. I shouldn't laugh at that.
That is,
I mean, we're laughing up the absurdity of what happened.
It's kind
of that's
funny.
Like, okay, you know, I'm not sure if that's wrong or funny or both.
Maybe a little bit of both.
None of us created it, but
yeah.
That is my first experience of seeing All for the Best. Sorry. Didn't mean to derail this.
No, that's okay. So, I love it. Okay.
All right. My number four is, where's my list here? It is Children of Eden. Have either of you looked into that show?
I have. Oh, I mean,
yeah, I know. I've taught a lot of
spoiler alert, it's also on my list, so...
Ooh, I just really, really love, like, this was actually given to me by a Patreon request from Leighton Ackles a few years ago from Musicals with Cheese, and I've kind of stuck around with the show. I just think it's very interesting. It's not like, like, it is one-to-one Bible stories from, like, the Adam and Eve days all the way to Noah, and, like, how they constantly make the same mistakes, and how the only character with an arc is God, who is, like, this angry boyfriend figure.
More like angry it's, dad, but
it just feels like he broke up with the world and he's just a little bitter about it. I think it's just really clever, and it's got some banger songs. Let There Be is an incredible number, especially when
Spark
Ken Page
creation,
sings it.
Come on.
Spark of Creation, Lost in the Wilderness, all those songs are like 10 out of 10 numbers. And
Andrew Lloyd Webber and Stephen Schwartz are our only guys who write biblical musicals.
What the hell? Like, Stephen Schwartz stuck with it, too. Like, he's like, no, I think this will be my bread and butter for a while.
Yeah, he does it well.
He does it better than Weber. I love Superstar, but Joseph, are you kidding me?
Yeah, well, I mean, Jesus Christ Superstar is so bleak in a lot of ways, whereas, you know, Godspell, which is the comparable one, is the opposite. You know, there's sad parts of it, but it's a lot more optimistic and fun.
Yes.
Which I
like. Children of Eden, check it out if you haven't already. All right, Emily, you're into it.
Okay, so my number three is Wicked. Okay, so I saw Wicked before it went to Broadway. The only time I've ever seen it on stage was at its pre-Broadway tryout at the Orpheum in San Francisco. And I was at UC Santa Cruz at the time. And I remember going up to see it. And this is before they had Joel Grey in it. This is when they had some different songs. Like instead of Dancing Through Life, it was like Raise the Roof or something like that.
Raise the Oz Roof.
It was something lame like that. And I remember at the time, it blew my mind. Now every musical is kind of living in Wicked's shadow. You wouldn't have a lot of modern Broadway or the way a lot of modern girls are supposed to sing on Broadway without Wicked. But it holds a big nostalgia factor for me, including its flaws. It is a great gateway musical. It's just, God, when you're like 21 and you're just that obsessed musical theater kid, a show like that just worked so well. And then by the time it got to Broadway and became this big commercial venture where you could buy all this like merch and whatnot from it, I was kind of over it. But I do think there's a reason why it sticks around, why a lot of the songs are classics. I would love to see a nice tight movie version, but Universal needs a franchise very, very, very bad. So
apparently, yes.
So, yeah, they really do.
What, the Minion movie aren't giving them all the money they need?
Jesus Christ,
you would think, yeah.
They're all over Universal too. Yeah, but I like Wicked. I think it's great. I like that it's a family musical. I like that you can go with your mom on Mother's Day or something
watch
and have a nice
philosophy club to the movies.
The other thing was, is I got really into the book before I read the book before I saw the show because I was really into reading Gregory Maguire's books at the time. And I remember reading that book going, how are they going to do this? And then I saw it. I was like, oh, they literally just changed the ending. They literally just changed the entire ending. All right. It's all just a sneaky thing. In the books, it's like, no, yeah, water does kill her.
Yeah.
And in the show,
I guess maybe in the sequels, she does come back. I haven't read any of them, but. Or maybe it's ambivalent.
It's kind of ambiguous, yeah. But I think overall, it's a big mainstream money-making, big-budget musical, but I think compared to a lot of them out there, it's one of the better ones. So
that's fair.
I like it, yeah.
I like this, and I like Wicked, to quote A Strange Loop.
Yes.
All right, Christy, you're up.
Okay, so my number three is actually Children of Eden, and, you know, I was actually like Jessica's, you know, I was thought I would be the only one who has this on there, but it's a fantastic show. I saw it at the Arvada Center guess probably about 10 or 15 years ago, and it was just incredible. I was kind of debating placement with this and Godspell, but I think this is, you know, kind of the more nuanced, biblically based musical, because yes, it is, you know, creation, here's Cain and Abel, here's the flood, but the way they tell it and the way they interpret the actions of these figures is very interesting. And, you know, this whole idea of, you know, God, you know, who they refer to as father explicitly, because, you know, this is kind of this dysfunctional family relationship where, you know, God wants everything, wants this perfect, you know, family, you know, perfect creation here, but the kids aren't always doing what he wants them to. And that's a very real parenting thing that a lot of, you know, obviously a lot of parents still struggle with. So I really enjoy that. You know, I love Stranger to the Rain. I love, what's the snake song, In Pursuit of Excellence. I really like how they did the snake with just like the multiple cast. So yeah,
good things in Children of Eden. Not many people talk about it.
It's an amazing show. Check it out. If there is a local production near you, by all means, go see it. Yes.
I never hear of productions of it, but yeah, I feel like I've heard of college productions maybe.
Yeah, I feel like it should be done more often. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I
think there was going to be like a revival recently and then COVID hit. I remember Norm Lewis was attached. I think he was God.
Norm Lewis as father, I would, you know, I would peek down New York doors to say that.
Daddy, sorry, daddy.
Sorry, daddy, Norm.
Yeah, our Broadway daddy, yeah.
Okay, so go, and it was announced in December of 2019 that it would play in the Arcata Theater in August of 2020. And that didn't
obviously
happen. If
anybody wants to pick that up, please do so.
Or just like do, I don't know, if you've got like kind of like a, if you're directing a high school musical and you've got maybe a smaller group and they're like a little more advanced, that might be a fun project for them or a college production.
It is pretty, you know, there's probably, I think, maybe about 6 or 8 main characters, and it is double cast. Like, you know, you have Adam plays Noah and then Eve plays his wife and so on and so forth.
A lot of roles for women in that show, if I remember correctly. Like, there's a couple good ones. Did I ever tell you guys that I saw Norm Lewis live a couple weeks ago?
Did you post about it? I feel like I
think you might have.
Either way, it was just an interesting thing. And I don't know if either of you remember Josh Young from the Jesus Christ Superstar revival a few years back. Apparently he lives in Michigan now, and he pulled him on to do the confrontation. I was like, wow, for a cabaret, he's just fucking doing the confrontation.
Yeah,
no one ever does that.
I love it.
With a piano and no one else. It was great.
Nice.
Either way, what is my number three? Oh, Godspell. Yeah, Godspell's good. can't top anyone else's comments on Godspell. I told my fun Godspell story, and we'll move on. All right, Emily, your turn. Number two.
My number two is The Prince of Egypt.
Ooh.
I cannot impart to you guys how obsessed I was with The Prince of Egypt. Again, there's a stage version that's happening or that happened, but I don't
It's bad.
Yeah, I don't really know it, but I love the movie so much. I think I showed it to my husband, I think just this year, because he had never really seen it. And he was kind of like, how have I never seen this? I was like, I know. It's just a great, animated musical film. It just uses, it has all the beats that an animated musical film should have. It's heavy. It takes things seriously. And the score, like the very first notes, I just thinking about it, or like the deliver us, like I get goosebumps when I think about it. I just think it's so good. And I've taught When You Believe to kids a million times.
Yeah.
Times.
One of the great uplifting anthems of all time.
Yeah, and the Hebrew section, I know it too, because I've had to teach it so many times. Adonai, he go, God. Yeah, it's so good. I just think it's a masterpiece of an animated film musical, from the way it looks and, from the acting and the characters, but like the score and the songs really what make it. And I can see it translated to the stage. A few years after that, I went and saw The Ten Commandments, the musical at the Kodak Center, starring Val Kilmer.
Yes, I am familiar with it.
it was, I remember being like, Val Kilmer's playing Moses. He was Moses in the movie. This is going to be great. And it was really bad. But I
choices were made with that musical. Let's just put it like that.
Yeah. But The Prince of Egypt, the film, one of the best things Schwartz has ever done.
Hard to disagree with that. I do want to say that I am bummed that movie flopped, and then they basically said that since Shrek was our only hit, we're going to make 1,000 Shreks for the next 30 years.
Thanks, oh, yeah. When DreamWorks was trying to figure out who they were.
Yeah, I am loving that we are seeing this, you know, vindication from, you know, the millennial generation. So, because you're right, it is a fantastic... I haven't watched it in years, but... she's right. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's great. Obviously, it's good to put on like Passover around that time of year in the spring. So,
Or, you know, Easter, if you don't want to watch, you know, Charlton Heston, you know, storming around in the Ten Commandments.
Yeah, or watch John Legend doing Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of things we could not be watching. All right, Christy, what's yours?
My number two is Pippin. Fantastic show, amazing metafictional stuff going on in there. I love, you know, it's got a lot of fun, you know, vaudeville type stuff. It's got, you know, one of those, it's got probably one of the best, you know, this character comes on, they do a great song, and then they leave for the rest of the performance.
Yeah.
You know, in no time at all, it's, you know, one of those really great character numbers. It's just a lot of fun and a lot of, very interesting with the philosophy. This is another one that I first saw at the Arvada Center, and you know, it's like, oh yeah, this is really cool. And then it starts getting into the ending, and I'm like, oh wow. And then you know, at the end where they break everything down, and then Theo comes back on, and the players just start kind of creeping around him doing the magic to do motif, and I was like, mind blown. I mean, that's just, it was an incredible experience, and still, you know, one of my favorite experiences in live theater to this day. So, and the revival was amazing. You know, they really leaned into the circus motif. Casting the leading player as a woman, I think, was a very good choice. You know, I'd like to see more of that in the future. Probably Patina Miller, fantastic. Great ensemble show.
I just love that Charlotte Dumbois and Terrence Mann, who are married in real life, played the king and queen in that revival. Ugh.
Yeah.
Great roles for them.
Yeah, great ensemble piece. You know, a lot of interesting things about life and ambition. And, you know, maybe, you know, you don't have to be famous or exceptional or wonderful just to, you know, have something wonderful and fulfilling.
Hell yeah. I struggle with Pippin a lot. People can go check out my episode on musicals with cheese of it, but honestly, outside the ending and No Time at All, I really struggle with that show. Like the ending, like I'm like, that ending is brilliant. I don't know if I love the journey to get to that ending. But that's fair. Is it my turn? Oh yeah, I'm cheating again. I'm being a dirty, dirty cheat. So my number two is a tie between The Prince of Egypt and Der Glockner von Notre Dame, specifically the 99 Berlin version of The Hunchback of Notre Dame on stage. So Prince of Egypt, everything that Emily said, wholeheartedly agree with it. This is specifically the film. The film's perfect, ages like fine wine, gets better every year. Now, Der Glockner von Notre Dame, do any of you know about the difference between that and the American adaptation?
I've only seen the American version, so okay. You'll have to enlighten.
So I found this version a long time ago, well before the American version even existed. It starred Drew Sarich and was directed by James Lapine. And he also wrote the book for this new adaptation. It was done in Berlin, and the sets were incredible. They had like these big giant pillars and background projections, but it's like of stained glass. Everything was done like in shadows, and they kept the ending dark, but they didn't remove the gargoyles the way that the American one version does. So it feels a little bit more tonally varied. Everything in that production is gorgeous. And I think that they put a lot of money into both the orchestrations and the set design in a way that the American production was like, we'll just hire a bunch of vocalists and that'll be it. And it just kind of looks cheap. You guys should look up what that set looked like in Berlin, because my God. And they changed the vocals to be lower in the American version, where they were just kind of showing off how high the vocalists were in the Berlin. It's just better in Berlin. So that is the best. If you are looking for everything you loved in the Disney movie, but a little bit more mature and on stage, that is the one you'll want, because it is very, very effective. That's it. All right. Number one, Emily.
My number one is Pippin. I love Pippin. I love the original cast recording. I remember seeing a community theater production of it when I was young, and it blew my mind. I think the older I get, the more it resonates. I think the stylization of it, the fussy of it all, the the dance being intertwined so much in the storytelling and everything having that, heightened vaudevillian feel, I really love. When I saw the revival, it was the tour because my friend Ryan Cantwell was conducting. And so we got to kind of go on the stage and kind of walk around and see it. Like, I can't even believe, what's her name? Oh God, who played her in the revival?
Patina Miller?
No.
Rachel Bay Jones?
No. Oh God. Who played, fuck you guys. I'm sorry. who played
Andrea Martin?
Andrea Martin. Yes,
thank you. I was going to say, I know you're tired about.
Jesus.
I was going to say, Andrea McArdle,
I
was
like five
it.
Different Andreas in my head.
And I was like, I can't get to Andrea
Martin.
Too many
Andreas. Seeing Andrea Martin doing like aerial silks was
mind-blowing. I saw that was Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz's daughter, Lucy Arnaz.
Lucy Arnaz, yeah. I've seen her in some community theater too.
She did that role on the tour, and it was great.
Yeah, but like, I think the score is so good. I think it's got that Fosse stank on it that kind of rubs kind of the rosy edges off of Schwartz's music.
Yeah,
that kind of makes it a little more subversive and dark. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was a kid, before it was even a twinkle in Broadway's eye, going, I want to play the leading player. I don't care that that's a boy part. I want to play the leading player. I would sing the leading player's part. I would imitate Ben Vereen every time. I just remember seeing that show. I guess I had to have been like 12 or 13. And I was like, I didn't know Broadway musicals or musicals in general could end like that. Mm-hmm. That could kind of, the ensemble the whole time, you're like, yeah, I'm into them. Yeah. And then by the end, you're like, scary.
Whoa.
Yeah. So,
you know, it's worth noting the pro shot is fantastic. Major problem I have with it is that it kind of cuts out that, you know, dark final twist at the ending. It's just like, you know, they say, not a bad way to end a musical, ta-da, bow. But yeah, otherwise it's a pretty decent
the infancy of pro shots.
Yeah.
And spot the end rank.
Come on, you got Ben Vereen.
Yeah.
Hate Ben Vereen.
So it, for me, Pippin is it's my number one favorite, not just for the nostalgia that it holds kind of on my heart, but I just think it's a genuinely really good show. I like it a lot.
Okay.
All right, Christy, what's yours?
Well, since I always do these by, you know, just what I enjoy the most rather than actual quality, my number one is Hunchback of Notre Dame. And I am actually going to shout out to the American stage version because it's, you know, I just love that they took this score, which was great on the film, and just expanded it in a brilliant way. I mean, so often when you do that, you know, they add a lot of extras. They add a lot of things that's like, I'm not sure if this fits with the score. I'm not sure if I like this. And yeah, there are some pieces like where you're like, you probably don't really need that. But otherwise, it's enhanced beautifully. I love that they brought more of the original novel into it, specifically restoring Quasimodo's deafness. And also what else kind of bringing Jahan back away and doing a lot of other things like that. I think it's a really, you know, it's something that was great on film. They made it better. And I just love it. I'm kind of sad that they're not doing it on Broadway, probably because that they have that big choir that they don't want to pay Equity Bunny to. But, you know, there's like regional productions that have like good local choruses that can do this for a couple of weekends. I think you could see that. And, you know, I like that, you know, some productions have actually, you know, given Quasimodo to hard of hearing actors and then have the singer work behind him. I think that's a great way of interpreting it.
I like that we all have a different iteration of Hunchback on our lists.
Yes.
Like we each have a different one.
Yeah. You know, it's one of those that they've done it as several different ways, and there's good things and bad things about both. But generally it's a really good score. And, you know, again, I've got to shout out the fact since Schwartz was the lyricist, I love the way they use the Latin in this. Especially, you know, if you are familiar with church music and the meanings, when you hear, you know, Frollo singing Hellfire and they're doing the Confiteor Deo, he's singing, it's not my fault. And they're singing, mea culpa, I have sinned through my fault. It's, you know, it's a fantastic juxtaposition.
Love it.
I agree entirely. Wow, I didn't think my choice is going to be this controversial, but my number one didn't end up on either of your lists.
Okay, you can tell.
I know what it is.
My number one is The Baker's Wife.
Yeah, Baker's Wife.
I know. I'm sorry.
Meadowlark.
You know,
I'm surprised it's not Rags.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Rags. I will say that one.
It's one of those, little shows that, you pretty much, it's one of those things that nobody knows about unless you know music theater.
Yeah.
I mean, Patti LuPone was in the original cast. Like, yeah. I think this is actually my first Stephen Schwartz that I really found. I don't know how I found this, but I found this album early. So it's like real big nostalgia for me. I enjoy listening to it. Alan Armstrong in the original cast is wonderful. And of course, Meadowlark is one of the best musical theater songs ever written.
It's a good 9-minute theater song.
It's
a fun, it's Meadowlark. It's a fun journey song. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those songs like Me and the Sky where it takes you through half a dozen different emotions, and it's a great actor showcase, and it also sounds fantastic.
Plus, it's really fun to have Patty be like, Meadowlark, Meadowlark.
Sing for me. Yeah. I can't do Patti LuPone, but you know how she sounds.
And the Meadowlark.
Sing for me, my Meadowlark.
Okay, that's better.
That's good. That's good. That's Patty.
I can't do her doing any other song but that. But no, yeah, she
has that very rich, dark tone that unfortunately we don't hear a lot of in music theater right now because it's all about, the belting.
The bright masky, amber.
Yeah, the bright D's and E's and F's and everything.
I remember when in Patty's book, she was talking about her experience on The Baker's Wife and mm-hmm. how struggled with it. But she also said, I wish more people would associate me with a song about a girl making a decision like Meadowlark than a girl singing about tears in Argentina. Which I'm like, oh. And I just love this musical, honestly. Yeah. Sincerely, if you haven't looked at it, it might not be your favorite musical of all time, but there won't be another musical that you'll watch and be like, oh, it's just like that. Like, this is incomparable in its own way. I think it's a ton of fun and a good emotional listen to. But what is your favorite Stephen Schwartz musicals, everyone? Why don't you leave us comments?
Yes, let us know.
Who do you think is
wrong?
The stupidest one? Like, is it just with The Baker's Wife as number one? Yeah.
Come and attack our choices.
Yeah.
Jess out there with passion? What the fuck, Jess?
I love that you pick these little obscure shows that most people don't even think of, but you just love to death.
Deep cut, Jess.
Oh yeah, deep cut, Jess. We love them.
I worry that people are like, "Oh, you're just trying to be a contrarian," but I'm really, really not. I just have bad taste, is what I'm saying. My wonderful dear friends, why don't you promote your stuff for the world to see? Christy, why don't you start this time?
Okay, I am on Musical Hell on YouTube and Facebook and Tumblr and Twitter. I have a Patreon. I have merch. I spend a lot of time talking about musicals, good and bad, and, making snarky comments about the state of everything. So come check me out.
All right. It's great stuff. You got to check it out. And Emily.
Yes, I have, excuse me, clearing my throat. I have a show called Stealing Focus on YouTube, and you can find me at Emily A.B. Clark on Twitter, TikTok, Insta. And we also have a Stealing Focus Patreon, so check it out.
I am on both of those Patreons. Yay. All right, I have Musicals with Cheese. It exists. All right. We'll see you next time on the Dear Friends podcast. Bye-bye.
Dear friends, spill your woes to your musical family. Dear friends, they will take your questions and turn them into nuggets of wisdom and anecdotes in an otherwise cynical world. Dear friends.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the Rise Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RiseTheatre.org, because only together we rise.